From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, beautiful people? Man, I hope you all had one fantastic weekend. Man, the weather was beautiful. I mean, sun shining about 50, 60 degrees. Oh, it was a great time. I actually went back and saw the fam back in Detroit. And I hope you all had a relaxing one as you popped a squad and watched some Final Four action in both men's and women's college hoops. How about it, folks? In the women's hoops, you got to love this. I love this because so many times, we've talked about this before on the show, but the popularity of women's basketball in general and how it just really isn't up to par when it comes to the men's game. We all know that. I mean, we've heard that year after year after year. But now to see this matchup between two undefeated programs, between UConn and Notre Dame, you better believe I'm going to be glued to my television and watch that one tomorrow night. It's just great for the college game. And how about the Final Four? I tell you, I still had Florida hanging on. I actually chose Florida in all of my brackets to win the whole national championship, the whole enchilada. And they ended up losing, as you saw, to the UConn Huskies. Folks, they are the real deal. And Kentucky, as they become the first all-freshman class to make it to a national championship game since the Fab Five. How about that? I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. We're going to dive into that game as, of course, the NCAA national championship game is tonight between UConn and Kentucky. We'll give you guys a preview of that game, and we'll also talk about the women's NCAA championship game, as well as so much more on the show. We'll talk a little Kevin Durant as he passes Michael Jordan's he passed the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, a pretty cool stat. But Kevin Durant isn't he even taking a lot of weight in that record, if you will. So we'll talk about KD. It's also Pick a Monday. We'll list some of the games and some of the action happening on during this week throughout the show, and give you our thoughts on each game. And Joe Dumars, ranked last, dead last in ESPN's ranking of executives in the league, in the NBA today. No surprise there. We'll talk about that and anything that's on your noggin. You know the number, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And today is actually the last day, the final day, that those who do call in will be entered with a chance to win two tickets to this weekend's softball matchup between Michigan and Michigan State. Again, those who call in will be entered to win, and we will announce the winners on tomorrow's Current Sports Radio show. So you don't want to miss that, folks. And also, as I go down here, my list of things to mention, this week is the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic. Yes, the entire Communication Arts and Sciences College is certainly buzzing. Many students around the college are talking about it left and right. This Thursday, it will kick off, as there are a lot of cool events for students as they get to interact with professionals who have graduated from Michigan State University and have gotten their degrees in journalism and in other fields, and are now working in the fields of sports broadcasting or sports journalism in some way, shape, or form. And pretty cool because Steve Smith will be here along with so many other journalists this Thursday. I will be sitting with Steve. It's a pretty cool event that will be happening around 3 o'clock. The doors are actually opening at 3 o'clock or 3:30, I believe. As Steve Smith will be hosting a panel a panel of journalists who have covered the Olympics, and it's going to be an Olympic theme and focused event, and you can sign up to be a part of that audience and get a chance to meet Steve Smith and all of us who will be down there for that event this Thursday. You can sign up to be a part of that audience by simply going to WKAR.org. It's a free event. It should be a fun time, and you better act soon, because I tell you what, seats are certainly packing up as we speak. So again, you can go to WKAR.org to be a part of that audience. And it's pretty cool, because I walked into work today for the meeting for this Thursday, and I walked right in and got to hold an Olympic torch, folks. We have the Olympic torch from the 2002 Olympics Sue Carter, who is, if anybody who knows Sue Carter, she's an award-winning journalist who is now a professor here at Michigan State University. She actually held the torch during its, you know, its whole tour in 2002. And has it right here in the Communication Arts and Sciences building. It's right there. As soon as you walk in the door in that studio, it's right to your right side. You will get a chance to take a picture with that if you come on out Thursday. So it's a really, really cool thing. You don't want to miss that. Again, just sign up for free online to participate and be a part of that live studio audience by doing so at WKAR.org. All right, folks, well, let's dive into the show. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 7th, 2014. Okay, again, tonight is the night that men's college basketball culminates as the national championship game will take place. Now, the UConn Huskies, again, they take on the Kentucky Wildcats for all the marbles. UConn, they top Florida on Friday, 63-53, while Kentucky escaped a nail biter against Wisconsin, 74-73. Again, well, excuse me, that was actually on Saturday. UConn again, they top Florida, 63-53. Kentucky getting the win over Wisconsin. What a game that was! A 1-point win for Kentucky. Now, tip time between the Wildcats and Huskies is scheduled for 9:10 p.m. on CBS. Tonight, can't wait for that again. We'll be diving into that game and giving you all a preview of that national championship game tonight. Again, if you want to weigh in on it, 517-355-9527. And the table is also set for the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship. And boy, oh boy, again, will it be one historic one. In yesterday's Final Four action, Notre Dame, they topped Maryland 87-61. And UConn, they handled Stanford 75-56. How about that? UConn is having one unbelievable year when it comes to women's and men's basketball. As both teams are in the national championship. That school is certainly rocking right now. Again, it will be a battle of unbeatens for the women, though. 37-0 Notre Dame, 39-0 UConn. They will meet tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m. tip time for that one. It will be the first time in the history of women's basketball that two unbeaten teams will play for a national title. Gotta love that. All right, in Lansing Lugnuts action, the Lake County Captains, they broke through in the eighth with their first two runs of the afternoon yesterday, capped by a George Martinez two-out RBI single, overcoming the Lansing Lugnuts 2-1 on Sunday at Classic Park. Now, the Lugnuts had cruised past the Captains 8-2 on Friday and then built a 5-0 lead in game one of a doubleheader on Saturday, but were outscored 14-1 the rest of the weekend in dropping the final three games of the season opening series. Now, following a Monday off day, Lansing's home opener will be held tomorrow, April 8th, at 7:05 p.m. against the Quad Cities River Bandits. Now, it's a dollar deal day at Cooley Law School Stadium featuring $1 hot dogs, $1 ice cream sandwiches, and $1 fountain drinks. So that should be a fun time tomorrow. Hopefully the weather is nice. And the Detroit Tigers, they suffered their first loss of the season yesterday, losing 3-1 to the Baltimore Orioles. Now, despite 8 strong innings from Justin Verlander, JV, the Tigers' bats couldn't solve Chris Tillman, who allowed 1 earned run in 8 1/3 innings. Now, the Tigers travel to Cali for a 2-game series starting Tuesday versus the Dodgers. Now, the Detroit Lions, they may look to add a cornerback when former Broncos Cassius Vaughn, he works out for the team today. Now, Vaughn previously played under Lions head coach Jim Caldwell in Indianapolis before being traded to Denver last season. If signed, he could challenge Darius Slay and Chris Houston for playing time. So that'd be interesting right there. They certainly need a lot of depth as far as that secondary goes. And former Lions wide receiver Nate Burleson has signed a 1-year deal with the Cleveland Browns. He was pretty excited about it, too. He immediately went to his Instagram page and posted a picture of him rocking the Cleveland colors. Gotta love that. Nate is so active on social media. Now, Burleson figures to be a locker room leader in Cleveland, as he was in Detroit before being released in a salary cap move this offseason. The 32-year-old was most famous for breaking his arm last year after getting in a car accident trying to save a pizza from falling off of the passenger seat. We all remember that. Oh, gosh. So congrats to Nate. I'm sure he'll do great things with the Cleveland Browns. He's a solid receiver, folks. All right, and former University of Michigan offensive tackle Taylor Lewan has a delay for three misdemeanor charges, assault charges, that is, that have been pushed back to be reviewed in May. Now, Luan, a projected first-round draft pick, is expected to be charged with one count of aggravated assault and two counts of assault or assault and battery from an incident stemming back in December. So we'll see how that plays out. And again, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has now scored at least 25 points in, get this, 41 consecutive games, which tops the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan's 40 consecutive game streak set back in 1986 and 1987. Now, Wilt Chamberlain still leads the all-time 25-point streak. And get this, I don't think this will ever be broken. 106 straight games for Wilt Stilt. That's not being broken. Come on, let's be real here. Which was set back in the 1960s. My goodness, certainly still an accomplishment. Kevin Durant was actually asked about passing Michael Jordan and said, no big deal. I actually wish it was over with. So there you have that. Kevin Durant is all about rings right now, folks. Of course, as the NBA playoffs should be starting very, very soon. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number. You probably have it on speed dial on your cell phone right now. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Again, those who call in, today is the final day for those who do call in to be entered with a chance to win two tickets to this weekend's softball matchup between the Spartans and Wolverines. You'll get to choose between the doubleheader, which game you want to attend. But again, if you call in, you will be entered with a chance to win. We will announce those winners during tomorrow's current sports. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. All right. Well, let's get to our guest for today's current sports. He has been editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine since, get this, 1983. Previously, he served as assistant editor of the magazine from 1973 to 1975. He produced the annual MSU Alumni Video Magazine from 88 to 99, the MSU Football Newsletter from 91 to 92, and get this, the 1988 Rose Bowl Championship video. He is also involved with so many other endeavors. And big news here, because he just retired last week. How about that? Bob Bow, welcome to Current Sports. Bob, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's great to be retired. As you can see, I'm dressed for radio.
Yes, you and I both today, Bob. No shirt and tie for me today. Now, Bob, I got to ask you, man, first of all, because I remember we talked last week on Tuesday, I believe, at Tom Izzo's end of the year presser, of course, as MSU bowed out in the NCAA tournament, and you actually told me, yeah, Al, this would be my last week. And I'm sitting there like, wow, really? First of all, I got to ask you, even though it's only been about, not even a week, I don't think, since you retired, but how is it treating you, and what led to your decision to walk away?
Well, I think, 31 years is an awful long time. I think it's time for somebody else to take the reins. It's been a fun job. This has been a ride. It's I've had a front row seat to MSU history and MSU athletics. That's very, very, that's just a great gig to have for 31 years.
It certainly is, Bob. And I got to ask you, you talk about 31 years, you doing that job. All of the memories. I mean, there's so many memories going through that noggin right now. If you had to choose one or two of your favorite, what would they be and why?
Wow, it's that's a tough one. But everybody have been asking me this. So, one of the great memories I had was in the '88 Rose Bowl, and I've told the story before. But on New Year's Eve, I crashed Magic Johnson's New Year's Eve party.
Back then,
back then he lived in Bel Air. And I was a little younger and therefore a little bolder than I am today.
But how old are we talking, Bob, at this time? How old were you during that time?
Well, I'm 69 now. Mm-hmm. So you subtract however many years it was to 88 and you get it, okay?
Young buck, okay.
I was a young buck. But I knew where Magic lived because I had his address. And but I wasn't, you know, invited. But I knew a couple of people who were invited. So I showed up over there after our New Year's Eve party ended.
Right.
So this was about 12:30. And it was amazing because there was a huge line of Jaguars and Cadillacs and limousines waiting to get in. And the folks manning the gates wouldn't let anybody in there.
Right.
So I said, oh, well, the worst that can happen to me is they're going to tell me to beat it. So when I got there, I said, you know, I'm with so-and-so because, as I said, I knew two guests who were legitimately invited.
Right, exactly.
And they said, okay, we'll have to call in there to verify this. So they had me pull aside. And a few minutes later, they came and actually opened the gate and let me in.
Really?
And what an exciting moment when I knocked on the front door and Magic opened the door.
Magic himself opened the door.
He opened the door and said, welcome to my home and invited me in.
That is unbelievable, Bob. And this is right at his house.
Yes.
In Bel Air.
Yes.
And you knock on his door, and that, you would think his maid or something would answer the door, but it's Magic Johnson himself.
He answered it himself, and it was a fantastic party. It was a two-door home. Magic now lives in Beverly Hills, but back then he lived in Bel Air on Moraga Drive, and it was a 17-bedroom home. I think there was a basketball court in there, and there was a full-size disco with all the strobe lights that Judd Heathcote often jokes about. So it was and Magic, you know, I guess, liked to be the DJ of his own disco. So it was a fun event.
That is unbelievable stuff right there, Bob. Oh, right. But did you at all develop a friendship with Magic during that time, or just kind of a one-time deal with that one?
Well, you know, I've seen Magic at a lot of events, and Magic is very, very congenial, very amiable. I don't think he remembers me necessarily. Keep in mind that Magic is pulled in about 2,000 different directions every day.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
he's
amazing.
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, he's Magic Johnson.
Gotta love
but
that.
But I get to tell that story.
That's really cool.
I mentioned to you when I talked to you that I had a great story involving Tom Izzo.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, sure.
And, you know, when Tom Izzo was a new head coach, before he became the superstar that he developed, you know, in his first or second year, and, you know, and I think his first year he had like a 50% record.
Yeah.
But we got invited to play golf at Crystal Downs by an alum. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that it would be great that I'd get some time to sit with Tom and chat with him and so on. So I was really looking forward to this.
Right.
So I pick him up in the car, and Tom shows up with this box. It was a wooden box, the size of a shoe box. So I was kind of curious as to why he's bringing that wooden box, you know.
Right.
So finally I asked him, I said, Tom, what's that? He says, oh, it's a battery. So
a battery?
It's a battery. And I'm thinking, why is he bringing a battery? Well, all the way up, he plugged in his cell phone into the battery and was making recruiting calls.
Wow.
And I tell you, I didn't get to talk to Tom that much.
Right.
But it was an incredibly educational event.
Right. And that's him calling right now, probably.
No, it was an incredible educational event because Tom was talking to people who were second choices, third choices, fourth choices, and the amount of work that he put into recruiting, I don't think the average fan understands how much work goes into basketball recruiting.
Yeah, it's certainly a grind. I mean, I saw the feature of Tom that CBS did, and they showed him, you know, hopping on planes right after games to go and check out, you know, different players from across the nation. It's certainly a grind, and that just speaks to kind of the dedication that he has toward his craft, which makes him great.
Exactly, and I knew right there and then that nobody was going to beat this guy, was going to outwork him, because the way he was recruiting, and some of these fellas that he was calling, I think were like fourth or fifth possibilities.
Right.
In
exactly.
case the Mateen Cleave said no.
Exactly.
You know, going back four or five times. So it was very, very amazing.
What a story. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with now the former editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine, Bob Bow. Now, Bob, you know, something really cool. When I was reading your bio, before working with the MSU Alumni Magazine, you worked as a full-time stringer for Time Magazine and its sister publications, People, Life, Fortune, and Money. Now, how did you get involved with those publications, and what was it like working for that?
Oh, it was a great experience, Al. I developed into a full-time stringer for Time Magazine, but then I got queries from all of those sister publications. Mm-hmm. So every week I had some assignment. And the Time Magazine covered 17 Midwestern states. The bureau that I worked for was the Detroit Bureau, the Detroit and Chicago Bureau. They called it the Midwest Bureau. Mm-hmm. And so anytime there was something happening where they needed somebody to get out to one of these 17 states, I volunteered and was able to, you know, do those stories. Right. Very little of my writing got into the magazine. I used to joke that I got a comma in once. But but you're basically reporting for the editors in New York who put together the bigger stories. But you're their eyes and ears on the ground.
Right.
So it was, I think it was like the equivalent of getting a PhD degree in journalism. It was terrific.
Yeah, definitely. A great experience there.
People Magazine was brand new at the time. I loved working for People Magazine because where Time was interested in big issues and economics and this and that,
right.
People were focusing on, you know, interesting people. And
exactly.
I loved that. And the part of the MSU Alumni Magazine that we now call Profiles really is modeled after People Magazine. It's essentially...
So you sort of adapted that into the MSU Alumni Magazine.
Absolutely, and it's a very popular part of the Alumni Magazine.
Looking at your tenure, Bob, you know, being with the MSU Alumni Magazine, how comfortable are with you with it, you know, with the status that you left it at?
Well, I think I'm very comfortable because I'll give you just one example, Al. If you look at the last page of the Alumni Magazine, it's usually a wow photo of campus. Spartans, one thing they remember that they take with them as part of their MSU experience is the beauty of the campus.
Right.
And that wow photo is designed to evoke some memory that they might have, make them feel good. At the time we did that, that was in 1998 that we went to that. Prior to that, I had my column there on the last page, okay?
Right, right.
When we did that, very, very few alumni magazines did that. I copied it from, I believe, the University of Maryland's alumni magazine that did that.
Right.
But very few magazines did that. And today, every alumni magazine in the Big Ten basically runs a photo of some kind of a pictorial on the last page.
It's a great memory to finish the magazine off with. That's great stuff, Bob.
Right. So a lot of the alumni magazine, the magazine that we created, is fairly standard today. But
right.
At the time that we shaped it, you know, we were pioneers.
Wow. Gotta love that. Now, Bob, something also that's so cool is actually you served on the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame Committee. Really cool stuff. How does one get on that committee? And, you know, what was your experience like with that?
Well, I got on the committee because I believe the executive director of the Alumni Association is a member of that committee. Mm-hmm. And whoever were the executive directors of the Alumni Associations kind of parceled it out to me. Mm-hmm. I became their representative. So that's how I got to serve.
Right.
And it was really interesting because the biggest problem is not finding the right person. It's who to leave out. You can only pick so many.
Exactly.
And there are so many great candidates over the years. And one reason I know so much about former athletes, even people before my time,
right.
is because when serving on that committee, I had an opportunity to read up on their bios and
do the research.
And do the research and become familiar
right.
with some of these folks.
That's great stuff. You talk about some of the, you know, there's so many names out there when you talk about who's nominated and who gets in and who doesn't get in. When you talk about those that don't get in, what are some of the names that come across your mind over the years that you really wish would have got in but aren't in there yet?
Well, I think over the years they've all gotten in. For example, mm-hmm. I felt that Steve Garvey belonged in there, and I believe he recently was able to get in.
Right, right.
And so a lot of the people that I thought should get in eventually did.
Right. Who was your favorite athlete that you nominated to get into the Hall?
I didn't nominate anybody in particular, but most of the athletes are nominated by somebody.
Right.
Anybody that I would have nominated, there were other advocates for them. So.
Gotcha. Gotta love that. It's a really cool thing. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we're talking with now the former editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine, Bob Bow. Now, you know, when you talk about something you also told me, Bob, is that you actually organize sports tours for the alumni at Final Fours, at Rose Bowls and whatnot. How does that process go? Because I'm sure that sounds like a pretty big job and an intricate one, to say the least.
Well, I was, at that time, you know, kind of a pep rally specialist. The first Final Four that we went to was in St. Petersburg. We went to a Final Four back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to one in Utah with Magic Johnson.
Right.
Okay. But I was out of the country at that time. But since I've been editor of the Alumni Magazine, the first Final Four we went to was 1999 in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay.
And I was the guy that put together the pep rally on the beach, that massive tent on Clearwater Beach across from the Sand Key Sheraton, which was the team hotel.
That sounds so fun.
And we set the precedent for other pep rallies, because after that, Tom went to took us to three Final Fours in a row, and then to two more, you know, one in Detroit, one in St. Louis. But the first one was the one in St. Petersburg. I actually went down there ahead of everything to advance the tour, to find an appropriate place, and we ended up putting this massive tent on the beach.
Right.
And to this date, I think that's the coolest pep rally we've ever done at a Final Four.
Yeah.
Just because of the
you're right
the
beach.
Environment.
Oh man, it was I'm assuming it was a gorgeous day too, right?
Yeah, it was a gorgeous day. One of my problems was to get Tom to get down and speak. You know, I had to find a route where he wouldn't be hounded by autograph seekers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we took him from the back road through the kitchen of the hotel and out a back door and
like 007 or something.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Right.
Another incident that happened, and that was my doing, and other people have heard about it on various talking shows, was one of our big fans was Jim Harbaugh, the former University of Michigan football quarterback and current football coach.
Exactly.
He was also the head coach at Stanford. Well, Jim Harbaugh was connected to our basketball program because I believe his sister is Tom Crean's wife. Tom Crean at that time was an assistant coach.
It's great because Harbaugh actually had on I don't know if you saw, he had on a Spartan cap down at one of the last MSU game. And,
okay.
And Tom Crean saw that.
Yeah.
And Tom tweets out, he's like, oh, I see how it is. You're wearing a Spartan hat. Okay. I think he said, I'll rock a Pittsburgh Steelers hat then. It was pretty funny stuff, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, he was wearing an Izzone t-shirt, if you can believe it, in the beach. And he had a broken leg, had a cast. And I saw him just sitting there on the lawn, you know. So I went up to him and I said, hey, Jim, would you like to speak to this group? And he said, sure.
Wow.
So got him to get up on the stage, and he gave a great talk. Obviously, he was a huge fan of Michigan State basketball.
Right.
And so that was, you know, and now I've heard some folks said that he didn't want to do that. That's not true at all, because I'm the one who asked him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And right away he said, fine. Didn't have a problem at all.
That's great stuff. But that's such an incredible story. I would have loved to attend that pep rally on the beach. Beautiful day. Oh, I'm sure that was bananas. Well, that's great stuff. Now, Bob, before I let you go, I want to ask you about, you know, this year's MSU men's basketball team. Of course, I've seen you at numerous press conferences and following the team, and of all, also the Rose Bowl run from, you know, head coach Mark D'Antonio and the MSU football team. First of all, the tourney loss that MSU suffered, going out, of course, the loss to UConn, who are right now in the national title tonight at 9:10 p.m. How surprised were you that this team didn't make it to a Final Four this season, Bob?
Well, the thing that surprised me was how good UConn was. I had not seen UConn, but they didn't have one of those records that would, you know, make me pay more attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they look I mean, they beat Florida, a team that everybody thought was the best team out there, the number one seed.
Right.
That's a terrific team. I thought we did phenomenal this year, considering all the problems that we had to come back from. I think that any time you've had that many injuries and that many key people out, and Keith Applin, even at the very end, I think he was still bothered by that wrist on his shooting hand. I think the team and Tom Izzo and the coaches did a phenomenal job to make him competitive, and they did so well at the Big Ten tournament that we became the popular choice of everybody, including President Obama.
Exactly.
You know, everybody.
Yeah.
We were the popular pick to win it all.
Right, right. You know, as production assistant Matt says, it was kind of the kiss of death because it brought so much attention to MSU. It's like, oh, my goodness. You know what I mean? And, you know, Tom Izzo is kind of the guy, the blue collar. I want to float under the radar and just don't – he doesn't like all that attention, but, hey – It kind of, I think it did. I think it was the kiss of death. That's a good way to put it. Shout out to Matt on that one. Now, Bob, before I let you go, really cool. On Tuesday last week, we talked and you said, yeah, you know, I started this thing back in around 1988 on a Rose Bowl year, and now you're retiring on a Rose Bowl year, Bob.
Well, yeah, what I said is I came here as a student in 1965.
Right.
That was a Rose Bowl year.
Right.
And now we had the 100th Rose Bowl. And it was a win, so
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's. I talk about completing
a circle. Did you plan this, Bob?
No, but it's right with what Mark D'Antonio says about completing circles. So.
Right, exactly. And were you down there in Pasadena to witness that that Rose Bowl win?
Yes. I was down there. That was awesome.
Unbelievable, right? Unbelievable moment. And, of course, this program is continuing to make big strides.
Were you there, Al?
I was there. We covered it. We actually did a Rose Bowl special, which you can see online at video.wkr.org.
Okay.
That's a good plug. That was a good question back at me, Bob.
But I didn't see you at the VIP lounge of the Nokia.
No, we didn't make it that day. We were working late, and by the time we got back, Alex was sleepy. I was a bit tired, so we took a nap instead. So, yeah, that's exactly what happened that night.
Okay.
So, Bob, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. I wish you a great retirement. A lot of golf, I'm assuming, right?
Well,
do you play golf?
A lot of golf, and I'll have a chance to listen to your program now.
Thank you so much, Bob. Appreciate it. Again, that's Bob Bow, now former editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine. Bob, thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, Al.
All right. Don't go anywhere, folks, because when we come back, of course, the NCAA championship game is tonight at 9:10 p.m. UConn versus Kentucky. We'll also talk about the incredible game that will be taking place tomorrow night in the NCAA women's basketball tourney. You don't want to miss any of that. Folks, Current Sports will return in just a sec. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Boy, we just finished talking with Bob Bow, who is now the former editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine. A really cool story of him crashing Magic Johnson's party. That was a great story. Thanks a lot for sharing that, Bob. Again, Bob has done an outstanding job for the MSU Alumni Magazine. 31 years. How about that? It was a pleasure talking with him. And now, folks, we're going to talk to you. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on what we're going to discuss right now, which is the NCAA Men's Basketball Tourney Championship game between UConn and Kentucky tonight at 9:10 p.m. on CBS. You can call in at 517-355-9527. We'll also dive a little bit into the UConn and Notre Dame game for the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, which will be taking place tomorrow night at 8:30 p.m. We'll discuss both of those in just a sec. 517-355-9527. Alex and Matt now join me. Matt, how you doing, man? Did you catch Game of Thrones? I didn't catch it. Please don't give me any.
Gosh.
I didn't. I you know what? I got home late last night, right? Because I decided to make a late drive back from Detroit. Of course, I was in Detroit seeing the fam all weekend. And I was with my mom, and she wanted to watch Real Housewives of Atlanta. So I suck it up. I suck it up, and I watch it with her. I'm like, all right, Mom, I got to get back to Lansing. I got to work in the morning. And I get back. It's pretty late, around 1 o'clock. I'm like, all right, I got to watch Game of Thrones. Go on HBO Go. Man, I watched half of it, and my eyes would not stay open, dude. I'm like, I gotta come back to it today. So I did watch half of it, but not the whole thing. How was it?
That's all right. You're in for a treat in the last 10 minutes.
I am.
I'll just say that. It was just good to go back to that world.
Right.
I can't wait till next week.
I can't either. Alex, how you doing, man?
Doing well. Doing well.
Good weekend?
Yeah, good weekend. It's funny how you told him about how we passed out during the VIP party. We couldn't make it to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
We slept.
We took a nap that night. Yeah, that was funny stuff. All right, guys. Well, what a weekend it was in both men's and women's college basketball. Of course, as Final Four games took place. UConn and Kentucky. We'll start with the men here, guys. UConn and Kentucky will be meeting up in the championship game. This is the highest seeded total to play for the title since 1979, I believe. 8-7 seeds, right, with UConn and Kentucky right now. Unbelievable stuff. And when you look at Kentucky, Julius Randle and Marcus Lee, they were so tough to handle inside this past weekend. And how about, what is it? I think it's Pathras off the bench. He came in and gave some great minutes. And I tell you what, I mean, they did a lot of their damage inside, because if you look at the perimeter damage, I mean, he only had 2 3-pointers throughout that entire game. And, of course, one of them from Aaron Harrison, who, my goodness. I mean, this kid is just – he has the clutch gene. This dude definitely has the clutch gene. He actually is 3-for-3 in game-tying or game-leading threes throughout the tournament. That's unbelievable stuff. I tell you what, Kentucky, they're a team that can get hot at any moment. They actually had a 15-0 run in the second half. Guys, just impressions from the performers from Kentucky right now, and you know, how do you think they'll bode against UConn?
Well, they've, you know, obviously all the attention is paid to the freshmen that they have and how they've grown up, because I mean, this is a team that had 10 losses throughout the year, looked like they weren't going to do anything. They kind of showed life in the SEC tournament, and now they're just beating, you know, giant after giant on their way to the championship game. You talk about Aaron Harrison. He basically does nothing for the entire game, and then in the last 5 minutes starts just draining everything. Mm-hmm. And when you have a guy like that who is so confident in the closing minutes, I mean, a team full of freshmen is outplaying experienced teams down the stretch, which is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the maturity that they've shown, you know, throughout the tournament is outstanding. It's hard to believe, really, that this is the same team it was a month ago.
Right.
But going forward against UConn, you know, Kentucky attacks the offensive glass like nobody else in college basketball, but UConn has basically been slated to be overmatched on the interior the last 3 games of the tournament, and all they do is make teams look bad.
Right.
So I think it's going to be interesting to see how UConn's guards play against the Harrison twins, because one of the things UConn does, they obviously play defense in the post very well, and they kind of deny you position. But at the same time, their guards are so active,
so great,
and so in your face,
right,
that it's tough to even get your offense kind of initiated. So I want to see how Boatwright and Napier go against the Harrison twins, if they can kind of neutralize that and do what they've been doing all tournament, which is make teams look bad.
Right. That's very, very true. Alex?
Yeah. I totally agree. And I'm also looking to see how Kentucky will handle Napier. He has been the X factor for most of the games that they've won this tournament. And like they contain Adrian Payne down low, they put 3 guys down low. Are they going to double up Napier on some outside wing looks? I don't know what they're going to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for Kentucky, they have so many weapons offensively that defensively, I'm interested to see how they're going to contain Shabazz Napier and even Boatwright. So,
right.
And if I'm UConn, I'm trying to decide with Kentucky. With the late game situations that Harrison has been in, he's been unstoppable. But for Kentucky, for UConn, how are they going to contain Kentucky down low rebounding wise? So those are my 2 big keys of the game that I'm looking for.
You know what, guys? It's funny. When I was watching that game on Saturday, the UConn game, UConn and Florida, of course, I have Florida going all the way. But I was really keying in on how Florida guarded, like you said, Alex, how they guarded Boatwright and Napier. And it came to a point in that game, if you remember, where They first of all, they start to run a 1-3-1 zone type in the second half. And they even, before that, they started to guard, they started to double team both blocks, which double teaming Boatwright and Napier to try to slow them down. They knew that Napier and Boatwright were definitely factors, and you got to contain them to a degree because, like you said, Alex, they can get hot at any time. But you know who that freed up? DeAndre Daniels.
Yep.
DeAndre Daniels saw those double teams. He was able to make cuts left and right, right down the middle for easy buckets, easy layups. And it just shows that UConn has some depth. If you do cut off the heads, you've cut off Boatwright, and you cut off Shabazz Napier, a guy like Daniels can get hot at any moment, which was definitely a surprise to me. Because if you look at Napier's numbers, I mean, he only had 12 points. Napier, and even throughout the game, I mean, most of those points came down in the late stretch of that game. But if you look at what he did defensively, he had 4 steals, and this is another key for me, 6 assists. He got guys involved, and again, one of those guys happened to be DeAndre Daniels, who went insane in the membrane. So it's going to be interesting how Kentucky approaches UConn defensively, and also how UConn approaches Kentucky defensively, because right. They have so many weapons.
And the funny thing is, although Daniels got open with some nice cuts to the basket, the 1-3-1 actually supposed to limit passes to the middle. If the guy down low moves up, I mean, everyone's supposed to rotate on that.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I think it broke down was because that's not Florida's primary defense, and it's definitely not Kentucky's primary defense either. And I think it just comes with just being more comfortable with a set defense. And the problem is, neither Kentucky nor Florida is used to running that set defense at all during the year. It's only during the tournament when they play against these two great players.
Right.
So I don't think that regardless of what Kentucky puts up against UConn, they're going to contain them with a 1-3-1.
Well, no, that's the thing. If you remember that 1-3-1 that they ran, this is the thing about Shabazz and Boatwright. They are so smart because Boatwright realized what kills a 1-3-1 zone, especially at the top when you're looking at trying to find holes in it, is that those diagonal passes to the post, that when they're not paying attention, they work. But it was a moment, if you remember that alley-oop from Boatwright to Napier, from Boatwright to Daniels, excuse me, down low, they started to see that diagonal pass is a weapon, and they started to keep going to Daniels, and Daniels just start racking up buckets left and right. Again, that's just being smart. I mean, those guards, Boatwright and Napier, are just so smart out there. They're impressive.
They're smart, impressive. And they're really good in the pick and roll.
Yes.
Because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, Napier, like you said, he only had 12 points. I think he only took 6 shots. So it's not like he was, you know, trying to play hero ball, just being the guy, you know, jacking up tough shots. He was just running the offense, and, you know, they run the pick and roll, and it's not so much, you know, that he's getting the ball to the roll man. I mean, DeAndre Daniels, in addition to being a player at the rim, he's got legitimate 3-point range, mm-hmm. and he was spotting up for open jumpers, and that's what kind of got him back in the game, because Florida jumped out 16-4 and looked like, man, this is going to be a laugher. It's going to be over. And then UConn just roars back with like 11 points in 90 seconds, and all of a sudden we got a game. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Kentucky's defense can rotate, because Connecticut will make the extra pass and they'll make you pay because they've got guys who can shoot threes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Giffey, he was terrible against Michigan State,
yeah,
much better against Florida.
Right.
He might be a factor. I mean, they've got other guys that can hurt you. It's not just Napier and Boatwright.
Exactly. It's a lot of depth on that team, without a doubt. Guys, we have a caller right now. Dave, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Good afternoon, Al, Matt, and Alex.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Well, once again, we see how, and I talk about this a lot, but how superior guard play can just carry a team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what more do we want from UConn? I mean, they took out our Spartans, and
right.
they took out, to me, still the best team that was in the tournament, which was Florida, and totally shut their guards down. I mean, Boatwright and Napier, and even number 3, I can't recall his name.
Mm-hmm.
Those three guards are just tenacious. And I think Kevin Ali made a brilliant move by going to the 3-guard rotation, having all 3 in at the same time with the 2 big men.
Mm-hmm.
They just cause havoc. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Harris twins handle the defense of Napier and Boatwright.
Right.
I was listening to another talk show early this morning, and they had Charlie Bell on. And Charlie Bell was talking about the 2000 run and how Mateen Cleaves was a coach on the floor. Well, UConn has 2. I look at Boatwright and Napier as 2 coaches on the floor. they're really good. And I think Kentucky is going to have all they can handle. And again, the big men from UConn are slight, but they are long. And they caused a problem for us and a slight problem for Florida. So, you know, even though Kentucky's interior, those guys, Randall, Holtris, and Lee, I mean, they're strong, but UConn is very, very long. So I'm pulling for UConn. I'm picking them, and I think Kevin Ali and the guys will cut down the nets tonight. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dave. Yeah, I have to. If I had to choose here, guys, we can make our pick on this game right now. By the way, number three is Terrence Samuel for UConn. I want to mention that, who's also been playing great. He's from BK, Brooklyn. Shout out to Terrence. UConn, I'm going to choose UConn in this game, guys. I think that Shabazz, I think that Boatwright, and I think that just the overall depth of that team and all the weapons on that team. Defensively, I think it's going to be a defensive game, I think, guys. And looking at, you know, just to harp on the defense really quick from UConn. Again, the guard defense from UConn is unbelievable. I mean, we saw how Shabazz just frustrated guys like Trice and Harris. Remember that Harris steal? I always go back to that Shabazz Napier steal that he had on Gary. When Gary's not even looking and Shabazz comes and pokes it out his arm, and of course Gary flings back and hits him in the face. I mean, it just shows you that these guys are in your face. They're a gritty, grimy defensive team. And I enjoy hard-nosed defense like that. I think it's going to come down to that, and I'm going to choose UConn in this game.
Yeah, and the other thing is Dave said it. They're lengthy. Their big men are lengthy, and that's why I'm very interested to see how Kentucky handles rebounding, because if you look at Kentucky's big men, they have some pretty bulky guys. I mean, Patrick Young on Florida was a pretty bulky guy, but Kentucky has some guys too, and I think it's a very similar makeup to what Florida was, and even a little bit, minus Adrian Payne, to what Michigan State has with Dawson and Costello underneath. So I'm excited to see, for me, if rebounding for Kentucky will be that X factor in them winning. But I agree. I think UConn wins unless Kentucky out-rebounds UConn.
Gotcha. That's a good segue.
I think UConn will get out-rebounded, but I still think they have, you know, every chance to win. I think, you know, Kentucky's big advantage is on the glass, and I think that'll probably bear out. I think they'll have a rebounding advantage. I still don't think it's going to be enough. Mm-hmm. I just think, you know, that experience backcourt, you know, the leadership of those two guys, I think it's going to be too much. I think they're going to frustrate the Harrison twins and get them a little bit out of sorts. But I think it's going to be a really good game. Kentucky has played just classic after classic in this tournament. They've won, every game by less than five, except for maybe the first game against Kansas State.
Right, exactly. When you look at Kentucky, man, I mean, it's really unbelievable when you look at this team, because they win close games. I think it'll be a close game tonight. And if you just look at that aspect, Kentucky has pulled out some close games. The average win margin, if you look at it, their margin of victory combined is 18 points right now, guys. That is the lowest margin of victory that has ever been seen in the tournament for a national champion.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
And they have a -9 turnover margin in the tournament, which is insane that they're still playing. I think that might be the thing that comes back to bite them, though, because you turn the ball over against UConn, and they're getting runouts and easy buckets. I mean, it seems like every single game, Ryan Boatwright has at least one play where he is alone streaming down the court for a dunk off of a steal. And I think if those guards speed up the Harrison twins like they've sped up everyone they've played, force them into mistakes, UConn's going to take advantage and get more easy points. And I think that's going to be the difference.
Gotcha.
And how about it? If UConn men and the UConn women's team win their respective titles,
Can you believe that?
We've seen it before.
Oh, that's unbelievable. I mean, if you're a UConn student, you got to be just losing your mind. I mean, you got to be going. I would hate to be on the police force in that university. Oh my goodness. Okay. All right, guys. Let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about again the women, UConn women, as they take on Notre Dame. That should be an unbelievable historic matchup there. We'll also do a few pick-ems. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Folks, the table is set. for the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, and boy, will it be one historic one. Now, in yesterday's Final Four action, Notre Dame, they topped Maryland, and UConn, they handled Stanford. So, UConn and Notre Dame in the NCAA Championship, it will be a battle of unbeatens as Notre Dame is 37-0 and UConn is 39-0. This will be the first time in the history of women's basketball that two unbeaten teams will meet in the national championship. First of all, guys, before we discuss this, I want to say how fantastic this is for women's basketball in general. I don't care what level you're playing on. I mean, this makes people want to watch. I don't care if you're a fan of the sport or not. I'm going to be glued to my TV to watch this game just because of the aura that both of these teams have. I mean, again, this is the first time ever that this has happened where two unbeatens meet on this type of stage. And, you know, I was looking at just prices and seeing if tickets are going. Tickets are selling like hotcakes right now. The average ticket for a lower bowl seat is around $200 right now, and people are buying it. I mean, it's great because how many times have we had this discussion about the popularity of the women's game compared to the men's game? We know it's nowhere close. But, man, golly gee, this definitely helps in that regard to a major extent, I think. It's great to see, and I just want to start the conversation off with that.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better matchup in the national title game. This is the game that people wanted to see at the outset of the tournament, since before the tournament even started. I mean, they've been on a collision course, two unbeatens. UConn, Notre Dame, they've already got history playing in the Final Four and for a national championship, so it's great to see. I think it's kind of comparable, in my eyes, to the U.S. and Canada in women's ice hockey back in the Olympics, where it's just two teams that are seemingly head and shoulders above everyone else. Right. I mean, they are in a different,
not even close,
different class altogether.
Just look at those Final Four games.
Exactly.
It's blowouts.
Just snoozers.
Yeah.
20
exactly.
point wins for both teams. I mean, it's going to be really exciting to see, you know, clearly the cream of the crop going up against each other for the title. I can't wait. I think it's got to be, you know, a lock for the most watched women's basketball game ever. I think
it could be. I think it is.
I think it's definitely going
to
happen.
I wonder what is. That's a good question. We have to do some research now. I wonder what game that is. What is the highest rated, Alex?
And it's coming off all the plaguing about how poor Michigan State how poor women's basketball attendance is and how poorly rated women's basketball is. It does anything but help, like you said. And guess what? You don't need a Brittany Griner to watch a WNBA to watch a women's basketball game anymore. This shows that if it's two gridiron greats, you're going to watch it no matter what, like you said, Al. Mm-hmm. So just a very exciting time to be a fan of women's basketball and to put them on the national stage for a time that they haven't had in years.
Right. So. I agree. You know, I got to get this off my chest too, guys. Of course, left and right, when you talk about women's college basketball, the name that you hear resonated left and right are names like Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma. But you got to give credit to Muffet McGraw. Without a doubt, I didn't even know her name before this year. I mean, it's so disrespectful for me to not mention her because, I mean, looking at her resume with Notre Dame, she's the head coach of Notre Dame. Four straight Final Fours, three championship games in 4 years, just the fifth NCAA program to make it to six NCAA women's Final Fours. I mean, that's an incredible resume, and her name does not get mentioned as much as it should.
Right. I mean, they lose Skylar Diggins.
Right.
You know, possibly the best player in their program's history, and all they do is come back the next year and go undefeated until the national championship.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable. Muffet McGraw, I should say that name to start every current sports show until everybody starts to resonate her name, because that's an unbelievable accomplishment for her. But if you look at this game, though, and you look at the history, you talk about the history of these two teams, Matt, Notre Dame has won seven of the last nine meetings between these two squads. Now, Kayla McBride for Notre Dame, she went crazy this past weekend. 28 points, 12 of 21 shooting against Maryland. UConn's weakness, if there is one, is depth. That's the biggest thing with this team. Backup center, Kaya Stokes. Gino was definitely rejoicing about this as she came in and gave their squad 22 minutes, quality minutes, and really helped the team out in that regard. UConn, they come out. This is the thing that's dangerous about UConn, though. If you look at just this entire tournament, the biggest thing about them is the way they come out in the second half, they always make these big runs to start the second half, which are so dangerous. Definitely look out for that. And again, I think this defense will come down to defense and depth for both of these teams. UConn doesn't have as much depth as Notre Dame, which can be a little bit scary, which is why I think in the end, I'm going to choose Notre Dame to win this game, guys. I'm going with Notre Dame.
Bold.
You're going Notre
bold.
Dame? I'm going to go with UConn. I think they both are going to win the championships. And the thing about Notre Dame is, yeah, you give the coach credit, but UConn historically has had so many weapons. They retooled this year after researching them a little bit. They have so many weapons again, just like the men's team. So I'm going to go with the Huskies.
Man. I'm going to take Notre Dame. I know that they're missing Natalie Achonwa, who got hurt in the tournament, and that's going to hurt him on the interior because she was an All-American forward. Not having that is obviously going to hurt you, but like you said, 7 of 9 against UConn kind of seems like they're the kryptonite for the Huskies.
Mm-hmm.
And even Oriema said, and I'm sure you know Muffet McGraw would agree, neither team has played a team the caliber that they're about to.
No.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, when you go through 4 consecutive 20-point blowouts, what's going to happen when you're playing against somebody who can match you blow for blow. It's going to be really exciting to watch. It's going to be fun to watch two teams go at it like this.
Right.
I think Notre Dame squeaks by. I think it's odd. UConn, it seems like they usually just kind of breeze into titles.
Right.
But when they are actually playing a team that is equal to them in talent,
they struggle a little bit.
They struggle a little bit.
You can look at the history.
I mean, it's when you don't, you know, when you don't get hit and bleed a lot.
Right.
When it finally does happen, it's interesting to see if that team's going to respond. So
right.
I think Notre Dame's going to hit them in the mouth. I think Notre Dame gets it done.
I think so too. I think it'll be an incredible game, though. Again, I think Kayla McBride, she's been so great for this Notre Dame team. Again, 28 points. She was just hot, guys. 28 points this past weekend. Saw a few of those highlights. But yeah, when it comes down to it, it comes down to that depth. If you look at Notre Dame's game, I believe all 5 starters for Notre Dame were in double digits this past weekend. They didn't need to go deep, but they did go deep to get some rest for this game. So should be a good one, guys. All right, 3 minutes left. Matt, do we have any pick-ems?
We got a couple pick-ems. We'll just stick with the Detroit teams here. Let's go Tigers at the Dodgers 2-game series.
1-1 split.
I'll go with a 1-1 split as well.
Well, I'll be boring and go with a 1-1 split. All right, next up, Tigers at the Padres in a 3-game series.
Tigers 2-1.
Tigers 2-1.
Gosh, we're boring.
Oh, my God. We're so boring. The only pick I think we haven't agreed on is, Alex, you choosing UConn to win both.
UConn women.
Yeah. So
talking about going out on a limb, choosing UConn women.
yeah.
Well, to take it to the NBA, sorry, we got to talk about the Pistons a little bit here. Yeah. They're at the Hawks Tuesday night.
Hawks.
I'm going with the Hawks, too. No, it's, you know what? Whatever, Pistons.
You're going to take the Pistons?
How many games have they lost in a row now? Like 6?
They're coming off a win against the Celtics,
right? Oh, that's
right. I think.
They did win. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Before then, they were on like a
bad
losing streak.
They're not a good team.
No.
Pistons at the Cavs Wednesday.
Pistons. No, Cavs. Give me the Cavs.
Cavs.
Yep,
yeah, I'm going with the Cavs. Never mind.
And then at the Bulls Friday.
Bulls.
Yeesh.
When is the season over with? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, not soon enough. And then versus the Raptors Sunday.
Toronto.
I think they'll get a win Sunday.
Okay. I'm going to go with Toronto.
I'm going
to
take Toronto, too. Man. All right. Red Wings looking to close it out and make the playoffs. Actually have a chance to do that. At the Sabres Tuesday.
Now, the Sabres are so bad this year.
Mm-hmm.
So bad. And the Wings should win this game.
You don't think they will?
I don't think they're going to win it, though. I'm going to choose the Sabres.
Give me the Wings.
I'm taking the Wings, too. What about Red Wings at the Penguins Wednesday?
I think they'll beat the Pens.
They'll beat the Pens, too.
Yep, so. Same here. And then we'll get to the rest later in the week.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday. And be easy, people.